Monday, October 3rd, 2011. Would you all please stand and rise with us for a moment of silence for a loved one that has recently passed and remain standing for our flag salute tonight. Thank you. As has become tradition in the city of Greenwood Beach, we have our youth involved in our council meetings. It's one of the highlights of our evening. Tonight, we have our flag salute that's going to be led by Lewis Castellano. Lucas is 11 years old and a sixth grade student at Grover Heights Elementary School. He enjoys studying advanced math and being with friends he has made at school. Lucas likes living on the Central Coast because of the mild weather. His dream is to fly military aircraft when he is older, and his hobbies are reading mysteries and action books, drawing cartoon comic strips, collecting autographs of World War II airmen. Lucas also enjoys belonging to the Boy Scouts of America. He is accompanied this evening, I believe, by his dad. Yes. And did the principal make it?
No.
No? But dad?
No.
Oops. So Lucas.
Please join me in the...
Everyone's hand.
You're a busy young man, right?
Very good. And this is a gift for you as well.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I know your big sister.
Thank you, Lucas, and keep up the great work at school and with those great dreams and career goals. So, Donna, when you're ready, roll call.
Here.
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 Here. Thank you, Donna. City Attorney, can you cover our closed session announcements?
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council members, members of the public. On Monday, September 19th, the City Council met in closed session on three items. First one being labor negotiations with all employee groups. Second one, existing litigation for Santa Maria Valley Water Conservation District versus City of Santa Maria. And the third one, anticipated litigation on one potential case. After reconvening into open session, it was announced there were no reportable actions taken in closed session. Thank you.
Thank you, City Attorney. We're going to move on to agenda review. This is where the council reviews the order of the agenda as presented by staff and decides if we want to make any changes. Do any members of the council want to suggest changes to the agenda?
No.
Okay.
I'll move that we accept the agenda as published.
I'll second that.
Okay, there's a motion and a second. All in favor?
Aye.
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 All opposed? None. Motion carries. We're going to move on to our ceremonial calendar this evening. This is item number one on your agenda, and this is a proclamation declaring October 5th, 2011 as Ride to Recovery Day. Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
Do we have any representative here? No.
Okay.
Chief, are you going to accept it for them? Okay. Come on up.
You and I grab that. Just grab that mic there.
From the city of Grover Beach, California, proclamation of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach declaring October 5th, 2011 as Ride to Recovery Day. Whereas the city of Grover Beach has always honored the sacrifice of the men and women in the armed forces, and whereas lives, and whereas the residents of our community and the Grover Beach City Council wish that the sacrifice of so many of our armed forces not be forgotten. Now, therefore, be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach does hereby proclaim its appreciation of the Ride to Recovery program, honors the program's commitment to the wounded members of the armed forces, and declares October 5, 2011 as Ride to Recovery Day in the city of Grover Beach to honor the wounded soldiers of our great nation. Chief, on their behalf.
I would love to say something. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor, members of the council. And this, you know, this isn't just an acceptance for me. Pete Sysak was supposed to be here to accept this, but this is kind of near and dear to me. My son actually rides with the Ride to Recovery program. He is a wounded warrior and was injured. And I can tell you just firsthand the impact that this program, the Ride to Recovery, does for the soldiers and their recovery and what they do. And it's just been a phenomenal program, I know, for my son firsthand and for those that participated in it. They will be riding through our city, Grover Beach, Thursday morning. They actually ride into Pismo Beach Wednesday afternoon from San Simeon. They're actually doing their ride currently from San Francisco all the way down to Los Angeles. So it's about a 400-and-something mile ride. They ride about 60 to 75 miles a day. These guys without any legs. They have hand crank bicycles, and they have some real interesting mode of transportation to get them through. And then Thursday morning, they leave about 10 o'clock from Shell Beach area, and they'll be riding down Highway 1 and be coming through Grover Beach. So if you have a chance to see them, you might stop by either Shell Beach area on Wednesday afternoon or Highway 1 and give them a cheer and let them know you appreciate them. So thank you.
Thank you, Chief. Now, in the past, Mr. Sysak had invited us to come and present the proclamation at the dinner. Apparently, there is a barbecue at the South County Regional Center, and I've been able to go the last few years, and unfortunately, I won't be able to attend this year. So I do, and the chief has offered to make the presentation, but I did want to make sure that check and see if there were any other council members who would either like to attend and present the resolution.
And when is this?
This is when, yeah. Okay, moving on to item number two on our agenda. This is a proclamation declaring the month of October 2011 as Rideshare Month. And I'm sure many of you noticed a very nice vehicle out in the parking lot, and I'm sure she'll explain it. So let me turn this over to Councilmember Peterson.
Okay, should we go out there to do that?
Sure. If you'd like to do it from here or out there, either way.
I'll go out there.
So okay.
Whereas the City of Grover Beach recognizes that 74% of commuters in San Luis Obispo County commute to work by driving alone, which significantly contributes to air pollution, road congestion, and decreased quality of life locally and throughout the state, and whereas the City of Grover Beach recognizes transportation choices, including carpooling, vanpooling, transit, walking, biking, or working from home, preserve air and water quality, improve personal health, reduce road congestion and reduce commute costs, and whereas Slow Regional Rideshare, as a division of the San Luis Obispo Council of Governments, SLOCOG, provides information, programs, and services regarding sustainable transportation choices for people living, working, and visiting San Luis Obispo County, and whereas Rideshare Month 2011 is executed by Rideshare and sponsored by the Air Pollution Control District, the APCD, City of San Luis Obispo, Fun Ride, Ride On, Enterprise, and the Regional Transit Authority, the RTA, to encourage people to use sustainable transportation, and whereas Rideshare Month will include cash incentives and outreach events to incentivize transportation choices, now therefore be it resolved that the City Council of the City of Grover Beach does hereby declare October 2011 as Rideshare Month in the City of Grover Beach.
And I believe accepting the proclamation is Angela Nelson, Program Coordinator for the Slow Regional Rideshare. So, Angela, would you like to have a few words?
Yes, please. Thank you so much, Mayor Scholes and members of the council. My name is Angela Nelson, and I am representing Rideshare, which is a division of SLOCOG. October is Rideshare Month, as it has been for the last few years, and our Commute for Cash Challenge is going strong. It works. By removing the barriers to use sustainable transportation, people are more willing to change. In 2010, 284 of the over 800 Rideshare Month participants were new users to sustainable transportation. And you get to win stuff. So our prizes, on Fridays, we will have three winners that each get $100 cash.
Wow.
One is someone who's trying sustainable transportation new for the month. Another is somebody who has been using it and is continuing to. And a third category is someone who uses sustainable transportation and has gotten somebody that they know to try it as well. We also have daily prizes, which are gift certificates to various biking shops, runner's warehouse, and various local businesses. And then we have a grand prize on the 31st for commuters who commuted all 5 days of their work week for the entire month of October. You're eligible. And it is a private wine tour in Edna Valley on the Avila trolley for you and 14 of your closest friends. participation is easy. Walk, bike, carpool, vanpool, take the bus, or try working from home. And then just register and log in your transportation alternative on rideshare.org. That way you're instantly eligible to be drawn for these daily prizes in the cash. The events are, in years past, have been themed by week, and they are actually, we're doing it themed by day. So every Tuesday is Transit Tuesday, and fixed route transit, RTA, and so forth, you can ride for free anywhere in the county all day Tuesday throughout the month of October. Wednesdays are Carpool Wednesdays, and we're going to be surprising carpoolers at various gas stations throughout the county and filling up your gas tank, $20 worth. Vanpool Thursdays, it's the opportunity, we're working with our various vanpoolers in the county to give people a chance to try riding a vanpool for free, see if it's something that they want to continue with after October ends. And then Fridays are Bike Fridays. So we have a bike breakfast every morning. We have bike happies at the end of the day. We also have discounts at local bike shops for parts and accessories. We have $25 tune-ups. We have bike ed workshops and more. So thank you so much for proclaiming that Rideshare Month is here in Grover Beach.
Thank you, Angela. Do anyone have any questions?
Well, actually, I do.
Oh.
Since we only just heard about this, was that okay?
Yes. No, I was just asking for questions.
Oh, okay. does it today start it? Is that it?
Yes.
So let's say you walked to work today then.
See you here. And Grover is obviously a small city. We think we're walkable. Hopefully we'll be sustainable. So I think we have some incentives out there now. So
that's wonderful. No, I appreciate the time. Thank you.
Very good. Now we can give her a clap. Okay, moving on to presentations this evening. This is item number 3, and this is a presentation by the Integrated Waste Management Authority regarding single-use carry-out bags, and I believe Mr. Bill Worrell, he is here. There he is.
There he is.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor and members of the City Council. It's always a pleasure to be in Grover Beach, working with your very able staff. What we're talking about today, and how do we do the PowerPoint?
No pressure. I had the theme from Jeopardy playing in my head.
Right.
So,
and the answer is. Single-use bags. Really, we're looking at three reasons for doing that. Waste reduction, environmental benefits, and to be a cost-effective action. If we look at waste reduction, every year we generate in California about 19 billion plastic bags. That's B with a billion. about 500 single-use plastic bags per person each year. In this county alone, next slide. In this county alone, 130 in 2006. And originally that bill was going to ban the plastic bags. The industry came in and said, don't do that, give us a chance. So on every plastic bag, there's a, you know, please return this to participating stores. Every store that is part of this program has a bin. You know, go to any grocery store, you see the bin. And the manufacturers were supposed to come up with a program to help encourage people to recycle their plastic bags. L.A. County in 2008 also considered banning plastic bags and decided to do a voluntary program with the caveat that in 2 years they wanted to see a 30% reduction in plastic bags. Okay, next slide. What were the results? 2%, 2%, and 3% were the recycling rates according to CalRecycle. Obviously, it was a huge failure. Considering this county, our overall recycling rate is about 69%. LA County, beginning of this year, banned plastic bags because their voluntary program also failed to produce results. Next slide. Environmental benefits, the second reason. 60-80% of the marine debris is plastic. And for a beach community like Grover Beach, that's really significant because you have to deal with that every day. The plastic bags were the second most common item found in cleanup events, only to be outpaced by cigarette butts. You have to deal with them in the cleaning up litter. Your stormwater management plan has to deal with plastic bags. Next slide. Over 1 million seabirds and mammals are killed a year by plastic bags. That's a beach in the Pacific Ocean, very remote location, covered in plastic. Next slide. They did a study of albatrosses. 95% of them had plastic litter in their stomachs. The problem is these birds eat these plastic bags. Mm-hmm. They get in their stomachs. They think they're full, but they have plastic in their stomachs. And they essentially starve to death with a full stomach. Next slide. And third, it's cost-effective to ban them. There's no such thing as a free plastic bag. We pay about $15 per person per year for the free bags. By banning them, what we're doing is we're not subsidizing the use of those bags. If you bring your own reusable bag to the store today, you're still paying for that plastic bag because it's in the price of the food and the goods you buy in that store. And finally, it's going to reduce your litter costs in the city by not having to deal with plastic bag litter. Outreach, we sent letters since last July to the 57 Phase 1 stores. We've held a whole bunch of city council meetings. We met with the South County Tri-Chamber Luncheon, where we got a very warm reception. And so we've had number 9th, second reading July 11th. Next slide. And this ordinance would include the 7 cities and the unincorporated area of the county, effective on September 2012. It would be imposed on supermarkets, large stores, pharmacies, and convenience stores, and we would develop an education outreach program to help the stores during the transition. And the next slide. Okay, this is the final slide. So essentially, this is what we're talking about getting rid of, right? These are the single-use carry-out bags. We're not talking about the produce bags that you put your meat and your vegetables in. We're not talking about the bag that your newspaper comes in. We're not talking about the bag that your prescription drug is put in. It's these guys that we're talking about. And essentially what we're saying is you have a couple options. The stores can sell these bags to you. Now, these bags are 40% post-consumer, and they're a sustainable forest. And that's already what they're using at Bonds. Here's one from Scolari's. And they all meet the ordinance. Now, for the first 3 months, the stores can give these to you at no cost. After 3 months, we're saying the store needs to charge a minimum of 10 cents for these bags. And the reason we did that is John Spencer came to our board meeting and essentially said, you know, that's his bag. They use it at Spencer's Market, and they pay about 12 cents for each bag. So what we're saying is, if you need a bag because you don't have your bag, whatever, at least you should pay a reasonable cost to buy it. It shouldn't be a cost that everybody has to pay for, regardless of whether you need it or not. So essentially we're saying, this is an option if you don't have a bag, or you didn't bring a bag, or you're from out of town. You can buy this for 10 cents. The preferred, obviously, is a more heavy-duty, reusable bag like that. Or even these bags have proven to be very popular with people because you can put that in your purse, you can carry it with you at all times. and you just undo it, and there you have a reusable bag. So there's options out there. We think we'll see 70 or 80% of the people using this, maybe 20% still having to use this, at least initially. And with that, that basically covers what we're heading down the street for. And I'd be happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you, Bill. Any questions?
I had one.
Okay, Councilmember Peterson.
From what I can recall, from what I've been reading, the supermarkets have been fairly supportive and on board with this, and I don't think I see anyone out there from the supermarkets to speak.
Essentially, only one was really against the ordinance, and that was the person from CoLab for, you know, other reasons, really.
Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Nichols.
Yeah, I have a question. You mentioned that we are already paying for the plastic bags that's built into the cost of food. If we're going to eliminate the plastic bags, the store doesn't have to buy them anymore. I doubt that they're going to lower the price. So why do we have to pay for the paper bags? Because we're already paying for plastic bags that they're not using anymore, that they don't have to buy.
Yeah, well, we obviously are hoping that they do lower the price to reflect the savings that they'll have by not having to give out the paper bags. If there wasn't a charge on the paper bags, what would essentially happen, we're afraid, is that everyone would just switch to the paper bags. And so we're still having all these single-use bags out there. And like the Grocers Association have said to us, you know, whatever you want to make the fee, whether it's a nickel or a quarter, we want to see a fee on the bag. Don't do it without the fee, because all you're going to do then is raise our cost by having to give people paper bags instead of plastic bags and really not reduce at all the amount of bags being used.
Okay, the other question I have is the quality of the reusable bags. Similar to the one that you have there. My wife has been using reusable bags for quite some time now, and she threw two of them in the laundry to wash them after using them for a bit, and both of them fell apart when they came out, both of them. What's going on with that?
We've got a standard that it's got to meet, which is be able to use it 125 times. So in the ordinance, and this is essentially a standard that was developed with the Grocers Association, and everybody's using it, is 125 times. So any bag in the future that they sell should meet that ordinance to qualify as a reusable bag.
Even if it's washed?
Even if it's washed. And that's the other. There's two conditions, 125 times, and it has to be washable.
So, all right, so the ones that they have now do not meet those standards.
You know, without knowing the exact bag, it sounded certainly like hers didn't meet it.
Came out of Scolari's.
Okay. Yeah. No, that probably would be a problem that we'd need to talk to them about. Yeah.
Okay. Don't wash your bag. No. Councilmember Monar.
Okay. I just have a question about the, you have a minimum of 10 cents per bag. As you mentioned, Spencer's, their cost is 12, so that means they might choose to charge 12 cents for a bag. Okay, so that's the minimum isn't just everybody's charging 10 cents.
No,
that's where it's going to start.
Right. We say a reasonable charge, but the minimum. Yeah, I mean, for the paper bags, if we didn't have the minimum, they'd give them out for free. And what we've seen is with that minimum charge, that's what they charge for the paper bags throughout the state. Now, a bag like this retails for about $1, so they'll charge $1 for that one. But on the paper bag itself, they'll end up, and we've been told this, that they'll be charging 10 cents for them. In fact, which one was Albertsons? For a month before the ordinance started, if you bought $30 worth of groceries, they gave you a free bag. So it's really a competitive thing where they want your business, and they're going to charge, you know, as little as possible.
So will we have an opportunity? Will someone work with them? Because the first thing, as a person who grew up in a very large family, 10 brothers and sisters, and, you know, when, you know, I had little ones at home, I'd go to the grocery store, and I didn't know how many bags I needed because, you know, and I have friends who now go, and they're filling up two carts. So is there going to be a bulk discount or – you know, there's got to be some consideration given for folks who are shopping. We don't want to be nickel and diming people, you know, in these economies, clearly.
And like I said, Walmart historically, like in Brownsville, Texas, gave out free bags. Albertsons and other cities have given out free bags for the first month. We're going to spend probably $20,000 or $30,000 buying free bags to give out to people. So I think you'll see a lot of free bags out there. probably the bigger issue is people now need to remember to take them out of your car and in the store, because I think we all have lots of bags in our cars. We just keep forgetting to take them in the store. So that's going to be the other challenge
Great.
For us.
Great. Thank you, Bill. So this is an item where this is a presentation. We're receiving this input and asked to provide some direction to our council-appointed representative that's on the Integrated Waste Management Authority, because as you've said, your first reading of this ordinance, I believe you said, was in November. Did I hear that correctly, Bill? So why don't we give some direction? And I believe our representative is Councilmember Monar.
That's correct.
So, Mayor Pro Tem.
I support the resolution.
Okay. Councilmember Peterson.
I support it, too.
Okay. Then I think we have a unanimous support, and we would pass it on to you when the time comes to make that vote.
All right. Thank you. I will.
Thank you. Thank you, Bill. Appreciate the presentation.
Bill.
Okay, let's move on to public communications, and this is an opportunity for any member of the public to address the council for a period not to exceed 3 minutes total on any item of interest in the jurisdiction of this council. The council will listen.
Last 5 years or so. We have a campaign called Rise Above Plastic. You can access it on our national website. You can access it from slow.surfrider.org. Just ran out to my car to change my shirt and get the bag. That's why I can't breathe right now. So, reusable bags. Many of the chapters have them, give them away, sell them for a buck or something like that. So, Surfrider's leading the edge on a lot of issues. The plastics issue came up to everyone's attention quite a few years ago. So, Google Rise Above Plastic, help with this ordinance. We need to get the plastic out of the ocean as soon as possible. Now, next case. I would like to proclaim or suggest that you guys proclaim our future as water awareness future. It would be really great if we all could take to heart the fact that if we don't have water awareness going forward from here, we're all going to be in a really tough spot. We all hold the same water future. We currently don't do the right things with water. Brad and I would like to actually get some presentation time to show the cycle of insanity, which is the Surfrider cartoon piece, which talks about the foolish things that we do with fresh water. If we could do what Bill did, we'd sure like to show you that. You can see it on our website. You can go to the national website and Google and put down Cycle of Insanity. You'll see that presentation. But when we really talk about what we need to do with the right things with water, it's all about using fresh water over and over and over again. It's about water banking. We no longer can afford to put 1,800 acre feet a year of fresh water through our wastewater treatment plants and dump it in the ocean. It no longer works. So I have suggested and been to the other agencies in this area, the City Council in Oro Grande. Brad and I go to the Oceano meetings. We intend to get Pismo and Shell Beach involved also, because their outfall is our outfall, and it all goes out the same place. But at this point, it's time for a regional approach to water. We have the
Avenue in San Luis Obispo. And in 2010, the U.S. Surgeon General stated that there's no risk-free level of secondhand smoke exposure. And now third-hand smoke includes the leftover toxins that from cigarettes that stick to the surfaces in like clothing, carpets, walls, things like that. And it's especially harmful in multi-unit housing complexes because it's hard to clean and it increases the property maintenance costs, things of that nature. And we would personally like to recognize the apartments that have gone 100% smoke-free to guarantee a safe and healthy environment for their tenants. And these smoke-free properties include the Vista Pacific Apartments and the Sunset Terrace Apartments. And these properties were actually recognized in a print media ad that ran in local newspapers in June of 2011. And we'll actually be selling, or not selling, we'll be mailing out certificates of recognition to these properties to their commitment to smoke-free campus. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Katie. And does the city manager have your contact information?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay.
Yes, very good.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Get a 2-for-1.
Oh.
My name is Melissa Peters. I'm also from the San Luis Obispo County Tobacco Control Program. Good evening, Mayor and members of the City Council. Today, we would also like to recognize the City of Grover Beach for their tobacco retail license. As you may know, tobacco retail licenses help reduce youth access to tobacco and help regulate tobacco retails throughout cities, including Grover Beach. This year, two tobacco compliant checks were performed in Grover Beach with the Grover Beach City Police Department, one in February and one in April. In February, Grover Beach, out of 15 stores that were checked, there was a 100% compliance rate. Wow. That means nobody sold to anyone. Unfortunately, in April, 4 out of the 15 stores sold to minors. I know, I should have went with the first one second. Which is actually a 26% sales rate. The most recent sales data that was conducted statewide in 2010 puts California as a sales rate of 7.7%. So Grover Beach has a little bit of a ways to go to get up with the state data. But with consistent compliance checks and community support, Grover Beach can help the state.
And I'm here representing the Mesa Community Alliance on the issue of one of your board items that I read in the paper, where you're supporting the supplemental water for Nipomo from Santa Maria. And we would like to offer some discussion before you support that, because there's a lot of misinformation about what that's really all about. And this committee is about 8 people up and down the Mesa, and this supplemental water, quote unquote, is not supplemental. They're just pulling it out of the aquifer at Santa Maria, $400 million later, putting it back in the aquifer up in the Pomo. And we just think that it's a bigger issue than that. It's a regional issue, and it really needs the Board of Supervisors to recognize that this is, there's a lot of scare tactics going on, a lot of misinformation, and if you and your council would like to have a presentation, they'd be happy to do it.
Okay. John, I wasn't going to stop you, but we actually have an item on the agenda a little later if you'd like to present more information, or are you?
That's fine.
And at that time, yeah, maybe you can make a
the
suggestion.
The last meeting I went to, I had to talk before it came up.
So. Were you in the city of Morrowind? No, you weren't. I was trying to figure out what city. I understand sometimes we do these meetings a little differently.
But
that's okay. Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, John.
Council, my name is Brad Snook, Surfrider Foundation. It's funny how, after a while, how these issues can kind of tie together, and things can come together from one direction or another. And we're talking about a shared resource like fresh water, a dwindling resource. How we are, like Jeff said, kind of all in one boat. Our chapter would like to acknowledge the continued efforts of Grover Beach City Council in dealing as responsible stakeholders with the difficult issues facing the South Slo County Sanitation District. Public perception is on the rise, and the district's board of directors has been unable to adequately address conflict of interest assertions by our county's civil grand jury. Surfrider's press release regarding the board of directors' response to the grand jury can be found on our website, slo.surfrider.org. Contractor. The board states, services of this nature to a special district are not uncommon. Many other sanitation districts, or how many sanitation districts of approximately 39,000 residents have a contractor serving as plant administrator and chief engineer? We'd like that quantified. Also, their assertions that the district's rates are the lowest in Slo County it's appropriate for them to provide side-by-side comparison on that metric. And the district has the fewest number of operational violations of any sanitation plant in SLO County. State Water Board recently documented violations dating back to 2006, and this summer the plant has had many violations. It would be appropriate that the board give evidence that their assertions of superior performance are true. A board of directors that chooses to enable multiple conflicts of interest should have a stringent program of metrics in place for mitigating conflicts. Their inability to quantify their own assertions in response to a grand jury investigation is disconcerting. The board claims to have conflicts of interest under control. Their incomplete response to the grand jury investigation is an indication that they have a lot of work to do. Thank you.
Thank you, Brad. Is there anyone else?
Good evening, Elizabeth Dukas, North Grover Beach. I am here tonight to provide further information to my local City Council representatives over the outstanding issue that I have been dealing with, for which I addressed at the last City Council meeting. I have spoken before you many times because of the inequities that I see in our local government, having experienced them myself, and in hearing the public comment speakers over the last few months. I have provided just a smattering of documentation that has occurred over the years, one incident as early as 2003 over, once again, a code enforcement issue. In August of 2003, I was forced to initiate litigation concerning a violation of a setback requirement. My neighbor at that time was the best friend of our then chief of police. I filed a complaint as before, with the city attorney and city manager taking a stance that is contrary to our zoning ordinance within the confines of the city, once again in litigation, costing many thousands of dollars, as has been experienced by other citizens when our city officials fail in their duty and obligations regarding enforcement and adherence to of our municipal code, building code, ordinances, housing element, and zoning ordinance parameters. I then requested of City Manager Bob Peralta that an administrative hearing be conducted to more intelligently and calmly address the circumstances of the situation. And it was, unfortunately for me, Mr. Peralta's personal determination as explained to me over the phone that this unit complies with zoning. He said if the downstairs tenant wanted to cook a meal, he could access the upstairs unit with the stove and refrigerator via the exterior staircase located at the rear of the property, which oversees my backyard. This, to me, is substandard housing, no other way to put it, because in an R1 zone neighborhood, single-family residence, it only allows one stove and one refrigerator, absent further building permits. Mr. Peralta reiterated that this was a less than desirable living condition, but that his response stands as a permanent record. The city attorney personally called me on my home phone and stated as such as well, but through what methods did he make his determination, how and why? Why would a city attorney contact a private individual on a routine zoning ordinance complaint? I found it very interesting. I agree with the gentleman who spoke in the comment period at one of the last city council meetings. The activities, the way of doing business that has come to be in the city has got to stop. We as a city cannot afford to keep doing favors for political posturing or for any other reasons. Because when you do any favor or favors for one person or group, you deny the civil rights and due process of many others. A private citizen should not have to hire legal counsel to get equitable treatment in the city in which they live. This is just preposterous, and I find that less than desirable. Thank you.
Is there anyone else that would like to address the Council of Public Communications? Seeing none, I'm going to close it and bring it back to the council. And let's go ahead and move into, it is customary that we don't typically respond. We just receive the information. We're just listening to folks who are registering information with the council. So We're going to move on to our public hearings this evening. This is item number 4, and this is a recommendation to the San Luis Obispo County Board of Supervisors to approve an allocation of program income and reallocation of community development block grant funds from 2009 to 2010 funding cycles. So, Public Works Director Ray.
Good evening, Honorable Mayor and City Council. The Community Development Block Grant Program authorizes the use of funds to eliminate blight and to assist low and moderate income residents. The City of Grover Beach receives funding annually from this program. Leftover funds from completed projects with previous CDBG allocations need to be reallocated to new eligible projects or they cannot be expended. Repayments of loans that use CDBG funds also need to be allocated to an eligible project in order to be expended. Currently, we have $182,142 in CDBG funds that are left over that need to be allocated. The funds come from a number of different sources. And I'm just going to give you a quick rundown of the titles of those sources. It's program income. In 1996, these funds were used as loans to aid income-qualified households to purchase homes in a development located on Farrell Road. They were used also as loans for assistance for minor home repairs. We did the architectural barrier project on South 13th Street. There were leftover funds from that project. We had an income survey in 2010. Had some leftover funding. Some program administration funds were left over. The UC Merced Small Business Development Center had some leftover funding associated with that. And then a number of programs, including Big Brothers Big Sisters, CAPSLO, Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter, the CAPSLO Senior Health Screening Program, and the Food Bank Coalition had leftover funds. And then finally, the Long Branch Avenue Project had leftover CDBG funds. To be eligible for these CDBG funds, an activity must meet one of three national objectives and one of 17 listed categories. In your staff report, I believe it's attachment 2, attachment 3 rather, you have a list of the eligible activities and national objectives. In general, though, the project must benefit low or moderate income groups or individuals. This can mean that the project is located within a qualified census tract. And if you look behind me or in your staff report, you'll find a copy of this map. The color map might help a little bit, but basically there's I have to find the pointer here. Here we go. I'll point to the map and show you the areas that aren't in qualified census tracts. It's probably easier. And that would be this lower area down here. That would be east of 10th Street and below Mentone, actually from the center of Mentone south. This area is not qualified. And then this area above Grand Avenue, again east of 10th Street up here, does not qualify. Other than that, pretty much the rest of the city does qualify as for the census tract projects. So, let's see, where was I? Okay, so basically, in the staff report, we indicated that there's some urgency to expending these funds. It's not a hard and fast deadline, but the county is suggesting that the funds be expended by about March. And the reason for that is if we can expend the funds by March, and there it turns out that some of that we couldn't spend, which happens a lot of times on projects. You get a lower bid or you can't extend the bid or some items become determined ineligible. Then that would give the county time to, again, reallocate any remainder funds back to some kind of other project. Another reason for moving ahead fairly quickly with this is that after June, we'll no longer be receiving administration funds. CDBG administration funds, which means that any administration we do, primarily Janet's work related to the various funding sources for CDBG, and then any work we do to get the project out would no longer be eligible for these funding source. Tonight, staff is recommending a citywide architectural barrier removal project. That generally involves installation of sidewalk where none currently exists, installation or replacement of corner curb ramps to meet ADA standards, and the removal of barriers to accessibility, which could include replacement of localized sections of damaged sidewalk. Project area could be citywide for this type of project, and that is because HUD assumes that ADA accessibility improvements benefit qualified income groups or individuals. So they make an automatic assumption that can go citywide. Staff could identify a candidate list of sites throughout the city, much like a citywide sidewalk repair program, and use some criteria to give priority to those, such as our street program. Focus on arterials and collectors, then focus on corner ramps and damaged areas with the greatest impediments to accessibility, and then finally sidewalk infill on streets where maybe a small piece of sidewalk infill would result in an entire block long of sidewalk. This concept would require little or no design and would not necessarily require additional council action to implement. This is the recommended alternative this evening. But as another alternative, council could direct staff to focus on a specific project area or areas with these funding. This would likely require some additional design costs and possibly some additional time to get a project out to bid, but is well within the reason of doing, and we could easily identify a project that would be eligible for this funding. So one more time with the alternatives. The first alternative council could consider tonight would be adopt a resolution requesting that the Board of Supervisors approve the allocation of program income to a citywide improvement project and leave it at that, or adopt resolution to approve a program for a citywide public improvement project, but direct staff to focus on a specific project area or areas, alternate two, or third alternate would be provide additional direction to staff, but keeping within the other 16 available criteria as listed in your staff report. Again, staff is recommending the first alternative, a citywide sidewalk and barrier removal project. The city has about $182,000 in CDBG funds available to allocate to this new project. Depending on council's direction, I'd estimate about as much as 20 to 30% could be expended on design and project administration. That leaves about $146,000 for construction. So it's not a ton of money once you get through the administration and design part of a project if we were to go that route. And that basically concludes my report. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Mr. Mayor, if I could,
couple of City Manager.
Points for clarification. I think it's important to realize that one of the reasons that we're going through this process is our contractual relationship with the county is coming to an end, correct? And so we need to try and spend all the various different pieces of dollars we've got left over before that happens. Now, the contractual relationship with the county, does that end with the federal fiscal year or?
June 30th.
It is June 30th. And I suppose that the March date is to allow the county, in the event we were unable to spend that, to reallocate someplace else. Okay. And then the other, just quickly, the reason that removal of the barriers is the recommended solution is because that is also a eligible use of CDBG funds. Just want to stress that. And even though and that can be used regardless of where the map, regardless of where the census tract areas are.
Right, citywide.
Okay, who's got questions? Councilmember Peterson.
It's wonderful to have some found funds of almost $200,000. That's good news. And I have some questions. I know that there are many, many things that we need to spend money on that we don't have money for. And so I'd like to understand a little bit more about your thinking process in making the choice of the sidewalks and the ADA access. And I'm not necessarily asking because I have an agenda. I'd just like to understand your thinking. I know that, first of all, you were looking for, you were making sure it was something we could do quickly, so we had to have had some design work done already. The other areas that I see, given that we've stated that economic development is our first priority, the other areas that could fall into that, as well as what you've recommended, are our West Grand project we're working on, our streets, and I streets are the thing we hear most from the public. We've got our Chamber of Commerce who is contracted with us to help us with economic development, and I know that there has been some question as to whether those funds can continue to be available because of the issues with our redevelopment agency and the state taking of funds. So if you could just give me a little more feedback as to the method in your madness, I'd appreciate it. Thank you.
I'd be happy to. First of all, with regard to other kinds of projects, a couple of the thoughts we had in initially considering this, maybe a water line upgrade project, an area where there was low pressure if it met that requirement. However, there are a water impact fee and water user fees that are also handling it. So we probably not overlap with another fund. Same with sewer type projects. Economic development is a program administration type activity, and I believe, and I'm going to double check with Janet here, I believe we've already we're at the maximum amount that we can spend on that. So all these various sources of funds that I alluded to earlier, most of those had been maxed out. That's a reason a lot of them that there's available funds left over. We had a limit that we could spend. You can check that with me.
The economic development category isn't the same category as the admin, but they tend to be small business development loans or training, that type of thing. They can't really spend $182,000 in the amount of time we have. We still have one group, actually. I just blanked on who they are. Oh, Mission Community Services. They still have about $1,800 to spend by the end of December from last year. And so even they still have, of their total allocation, which is only $5,000, they're still working on that $5,000. They just don't spend it fast
enough. Is that
enough
for the facade improvement program?
No. That's I think it was like on-the-job training or seminar, that type of thing. Maybe computer training, that type of thing. But since you bring up facade, facade improvement is somewhat eligible. You have to, if I remember correctly, the business owner has to be income eligible, or you have to prove that you created or retained jobs due to the improvement. So most cities don't attempt that. And then on Grand Avenue project, the only thing that would be eligible are the curb ramps. Repaving is not an eligible use.
Okay. Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you, Janet.
One question I have is, could we not continue the sidewalk on South 13th Street? Isn't that eligible for funds? We still have, two or three blocks to go where the work we've done so far, but on the west side of 13th Street?
And the answer is yes. You could.
Okay. Any idea what cost we're looking at to complete the sidewalks and curbs?
Well, these days...
Just off the top of your head.
Actually, off the top of my head. These days, a pretty good rule of thumb for just curb gutter sidewalk on one side of a street for a city block is about $100,000 in construction alone. That's if it's really straightforward, not a lot of interaction with private property owners, not a lot of deviation in plan line and grade different problems. If you recall, I believe a few years back, there was a little bit of additional design done on the next set of sidewalks. Some real preliminary design work was done. And spoken with other staff members, their recollection is that the project was cut short of that next step because there are a lot of interactions with private property owners, and there's a lot of right-of-way issues related in the next couple blocks. Apparently, a lot of the houses have yet to dedicate the full street right-of-way. So the right-of-way pops in and out through various properties, and there's a significant drainage and grade issue problem with some of the houses. So, you know, $100,000 is a pretty good rule of thumb if it's all straightforward. In the staff report, I indicated that you probably wouldn't get a whole block out of that full 183 after design and right-of-way issues and dealing with some of the private property improvements. And the other fear I have, and I haven't done a lot of CDBG projects, but the other concern I have in talking with the county about eligibility of certain aspects of the Long Branch project is that we may be able to, for example, remove a private property owner's fence so that we could build a sidewalk, but the CDBG funds may not pay to replace the fence. It's odd how they divide up what's eligible and what's ineligible. So as we go down that path, we start accruing non-eligible costs, and we'd have to find another source of funds.
Okay, thank you. And also, we have a citywide sidewalk repair program you've mentioned in your report here.
There was one created years ago. It needs to be dusted off and updated, you know, based on projects that have been completed. But there was an inventory done years ago. I got a copy of it about a week ago, and it does need some updating. It doesn't look like it's been implemented much in the last, I don't know how many years. So, you know, it would be something we'd pick up again, go out, do an inventory, try to prioritize $180,000 worth of work and come up with a project that we could complete quickly.
Well, I know within the last, at least no less than 2 years, there are areas that I have personally noticed that the city has gone out and painted the edges of the sidewalk yellow where there is a dangerous condition,
right?
Which I guess is good in some respect, but it also highlights our liability, in my opinion. I don't think you can avoid your liability by simply painting it yellow on the basis that we warned you, so don't trip over it. That's a little bit scary to me. But if we have done that recently, within the last 2 years, I know it's been done several places I've seen, would that not be part of an update? Would that not be recorded in this sidewalk repair program?
Not to my knowledge, no. Those would be, as far as I know, again, I've been here about a year and a half now, but right. As far as I know, those were most likely done on a one-at-a-time basis. You know, a complaint was made and somebody went out and marked it.
Okay. So. All right. Thank you.
Councilmember Monar.
It made it sound like you might have a recommendation or a list of things that you would feel that we should do to use the money the best way. Do you?
No, I don't. I apologize if the staff report made it seem that way. No, generally what I'm saying is that it wouldn't be very difficult to go out and look at the main arterials and collectors and identify locations where the money could be spent with very little design effort and get out to bid quickly. And those could be easily prioritized based on the list of criteria I established here or some other criteria if council wishes to direct us that way.
I think actually that would be a good way to go, you know, not spend a lot of money on design and actually get some work done.
Okay.
To have you provide us with a recommended list.
You have any other questions?
No.
Okay, great. So I have some questions and I have some comments and they're going to kind of blend. So I'm going to hold those. I'm going to open this up to the public. I'm going to see if there's anyone from the public that would like to address this item before the council, and then we'll come back and have some more discussion. Is there anyone that would like to address the item before the council this evening? Okay, seeing none, bring it back to the council. So let me I'm going to exercise prerogative of the chair and start the discussion. And first, thanks staff for identifying these unallocated funds. This is something that we customarily do. And Phyllis, I really appreciate you asking that question because it did kind of give the impression that there were some projects that the staff had thought about. And so with that, I know it's going to take time to identify those projects and come back and get, you know, run that by the council. So, you know, I mean, there's some logistics here. There's a CIP program. So I don't know if we can do a whole lot of things quickly. Unfortunately, sometimes that's what bureaucracies do, I mean, even if you're in favor of a project. So I'm going to put that aside. The funds that have been identified, you've talked about $87,483 are part of housing projects that the previous councils in this council had utilized to help folks get into homes. In particular, mm-hmm. some of the projects were off of Farrell. So I'm curious to know, what is the status of the housing project on Farrell and South 10th? Because I'm a little concerned that we're suggesting using this little bit of money on a different use when, in fact, we have a project that this council, I believe, has signed a contract with, and we have not had an update in months. So where are we on that project?
The agreement has been signed. I'm expecting that we should get into the planning process before the end of the year. It should be before the Planning Commission. There has been, as you're aware, certain commitments made relative to on behalf of the Redevelopment Housing Agency to that particular project. And I believe that includes the payment of fees and impact fees as well.
So are you aware, is there anything under what is currently going on with respect to redevelopment agencies that would prevent us from moving forward with this project?
Well, first of all, it all depends. I suppose this project has been identified because the council the agency board made the commitment before the actual law changed. And it has been recognized, at least at this point in our filings with the state, that this is one of our obligations that we have to meet. Now, ultimately, if the agency is eliminated, we would have to continue to meet the pre-existing obligations with this particular project that the city had already committed itself to. That's not to see that there may be unforeseen expenditures that could come up with that project, but it's unlikely that would happen before March. The other thing I do want to mention is I recognize the fact that these were generated from housing-related dollars, but there is no restriction on their use once those dollars are returned to the city. It's recognized as program income, which can be spent for any eligible expenditure.
Understood. But, you know, where I'm coming from is we are still trying to provide affordable housing, and these dollars have historically been used for that. So I just want to raise that for discussion. The other part of this is this $182,000 was from the Long Branch demonstration project, where there was in fact a Safe Routes to School element to it. In particular, looks like about $39,376. So I know that you're saying we wouldn't have enough money to construct even half a block. Would it make better sense to at least continue that project? And I don't know if you can use these funds for design. Are these funds restricted?
My understanding is that if we're designing and constructing a project, we can use it a portion of the funds. We have an administration component of it, and we can use a portion of the funds for design of the project we're constructing. Just solely for design, I don't believe so.
Well, I'm not talking about the entire 182. I'm talking about the nearly $40,000 remaining from that project on Long Branch, in which there was, in fact, a Safe Routes to School component. Right. And the reason I'm asking this question is, are we able to leverage this money and then talk to SLOCOG or the state to get money to actually construct a continuous sidewalk, as the Mayor Pro Tem had brought up, on South 13th Street?
Let me see if I can answer that. So I'm not sure, I'm not sure we could even design a project solely with this money and then leverage other funds for the construction component. I believe the design and construction would have to come out of the CDBG funds. That's not to say that we couldn't potentially, having designed and having retained a reasonable amount of construction funds for that construction out of CDBG funds, that we couldn't then do non-CDBG eligible components, or CDBG eligible components for that matter, with some other funding source, such as campaigning the COG board.
Okay. Thank you for that response, because I think the Mayor Pro Tem touched on this as far as looking at either extending South 13th, the sidewalk from its current terminus at Manhattan to Trueville, because I can tell you I either drive by there, walk by there, bike by there, since I live in the southern part of the city, and I see children crossing at Manhattan every day and then walk into a bus stop that's on Trueville. And so the segment that I know you're saying has some design challenges and some property owner challenges is, I think, a segment that we could, if not with this money, other funds, to complete that out. And I think even part of that is that there's a missing segment on Long Branch between 13th and 14th.
That's right.
So I just want to challenge us to think a little bit more about that. And then as I do the math, I think there could be money there to talk about citywide ADA requirements. And I will say that I've been on this council for 9 years. The sidewalk program that has been what's brought up here today has, I don't recall it ever coming before this council when we have had a conversation regarding sidewalks. I do recall a meeting previously where we had talked about utilizing a percentage of the street funds, and the council majority at that time felt they didn't want to spend money on sidewalks, which I didn't agree with, because a safe community means you have not only good streets, but you have safe sidewalks that are continuous for people to walk on. So I'm saying all this because I think I think we might want to go, and this is just my opinion, we're going to have more discussion, is that either we make a commitment to complete the South 13th sidewalk or even Long Branch, and if that's not the case, then I think we really ought to take a long, hard look at what these funds were originally intended for, because the housing project that, for whatever reason, has languished, and I don't know why, I don't know. But we need to understand that. And then the other is, I'm okay if staff wants to bring back a list of critical sidewalk improvements, but that's going to be based on where this council wants to go. But I just wanted to get all the thoughts out there for discussion. So, Councilmember Monar.
I actually agree. I have my office on Trueville, and I go down 13th every day, either biking, walking, or driving. And I think it would really make sense to finish 13th and to finish between 13th and 14th on Long Branch. There are those, the housing down there, which is multifamily. I see a lot of children every day coming from there, and it's really is essential that they have proper sidewalks to walk on to get to school. So I'd be in support of finding ways to use that on Long Branch to finish it off, and then further south on 13th, most definitely.
Okay. Councilmember Peterson.
I would be in favor of doing sidewalks on South 13th. On Long Branch, between 13th and 14th, we have a number of different kinds of uses. We have some residential, we have some multifamily, we have quite a few businesses, and that was an area where we had even not made a decision regarding the zoning changes, because we had talked about, and that's how we actually finished off the street there, we had talked about perhaps dedicating back part of that street to some of those businesses. And I know of circumstances that have come before the council or at least come to my attention, one came before the council, where businesses weren't able to do what they needed to do because they didn't have enough room for parking. And so if we're able to give some of that right away back to the cities, I mean back to the businesses, then they could perhaps finish them off and make Long Branch more more workable for the businesses and multifamily units that are there. So I would be concerned about putting in sidewalks because it's almost as if, I agree we need sidewalks for children to be safe, but it's almost as if we're, you know, we're putting a Band-Aid on a bigger sore. And I think we need to address the bigger issue there before we start putting in sidewalks there.
And you're saying the bigger issue is?
The bigger issue is that, that Long Branch is too wide. We need to find some way to perhaps deed back some of that land to the property owners there and so that they can make good use of it in their businesses or their multifamily developments. And yes, we need sidewalks, but we'd have to think about where they're actually going to go and how we're going to solve that problem. And we haven't done the work on that yet.
I don't understand what you're getting at. We can just extend the sidewalks out further. Isn't that just the simple way of doing it? And then,
yes, but we haven't made any decisions that we haven't really done the research or made the decisions. So, are the sidewalks going to go on a street that's 60 feet wide, or are they going to go on the street that's, you know, 80 feet wide, which it is? So we don't know where we would be putting the sidewalks, and we haven't done any talking with any of the businesses or the property owners there.
I don't think it would make a difference to the business owner if you got a larger sidewalk.
It's not the size of the sidewalk, it's where it's placed.
You know, there always seem to be a lot of impediments that start to occur when we try to fix something. And it's, I know you talk about a Band-Aid, but it'd be really nice to finally just finish something and not have it be halfway done, because that's really what it's at right now.
Great, thank you. Mayor Pro Tem, did you have anything else?
Nothing further.
Okay. So we need to give staff some direction. And what I'm thinking, and I'll see, maybe just kind of help us along, is I'm hearing that there's some interest in maybe finishing out South 13th Street and only the west side from Manhattan to Trouville. So I think that would be our priority. The second would be to look at Long Branch from 13th to 14th, and I know that really brings up the issue of the width of the street. I'm a little concerned on that, in that we're going to look at this segment in isolation when we really don't have a long-term plan, which we started trying to do on Long Branch. So I think we can have a little discussion, but to hopefully, I think it's a critical piece that needs a sidewalk and a decision needs to be made. But we can do South 13th and then look at Long Branch too. Yeah.
Why can't we look at, we did those bulb outs on Long Branch, right, by the school. If we've extended out, why can't we just keep it going, you know, just straight down? I mean, we've already, you know, made the street less wide there. Why not use those dimensions? That was part of the idea, was to reduce the amount of street surface that we have to keep repairing. So, I mean.
Yeah.
I concur, and I think we ought to give staff that direction and have them come back to us.
So basically, South 13th, West Side, Manhattan to Trouville, and then Long Branch, and we'll just have to figure out some of the impediments on Long Branch, but to get that done, because I think that is an unfinished discussion, and we should do that relatively quickly. Yeah. Sounds good. And the only reason I'm not pushing for this citywide program is a couple of things. I think staff obviously is going to have to go out and identify where there are opportunities. But the other part of this that I was remiss in mentioning is we do, in fact, have about $900,000 that has come through the SLOCOC, through Transportation Enhancement Funds, federal dollars, and even some state dollars, to not only do landscape medians downtown, but also to do some of the other improvements, sort of like what we did on the west end of Grand. So there is money that is available, and I know that it requires we have to have design and do the environmental, and I think staff, we're looking for you to tell us if you need assistance, if you need to bring someone, a consultant or Gehring and Taylor, who has worked with us to help that effort. I think we need to do that, because even beyond phase two, we have a slow cog board meeting on Wednesday. There has been a recommendation for another $600,000 in phase three. So I think there are some opportunities out there. So I think a city attorney, we've had a lot of discussion. We probably should have someone form a motion, or if we're just given direction on this.
Well, I think I'll leave it up to staff. I think the direction was given by consensus by majority, or if not unanimously. So I guess a motion would only formalize that or maybe clarify it. But if staff is clear on the direction, then there is no really need for motion.
Mr. Mayor, if yes. I could, just for clarification, 13th Street is completely understood. Just again on Long Branch, was there any specific location along Long Branch that you were interested in?
I think the only real opportunity, I would say, is on the south side of Long Branch, correct?
We did take care of that corner that was in question. That was on the north side, correct?
Right, but you're talking between 13th and 14th, is
yes.
that correct?
That's correct on Long Branch.
I think that's the missing segment.
On the south side?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
One item that would need to be handled, there's a resolution included in your packet.
Yeah, I was looking at that.
Okay,
so go ahead.
So part of the motion, if it was council's direction to pass a resolution requesting that the Board of Supervisors approve allocation of program income to a citywide public improvement project. Now, keep in mind, by doing that, it's citywide. If you're doing a accessibility project, then it, if you tell them you want it allocated citywide, then you can further tell us that you want that to be a specific location. So I think initially we need we need your approval to adopt a resolution requesting that the board approve allocation to a citywide public improvement project. And then beyond that, we're looking, I understand your direction is that you would like to focus on 13th Street first and then look at a section of Long Branch. I believe you're probably going to, my estimate is that the funding is probably just going to cover a portion of 13th. So if that's your direction, order of priority, I think we would focus on 13th, get some preliminary work done, and see where we think we're landing.
Okay, and thank you for those clarifications. And I agree that if we go with what's recommended, we can give further direction. City Attorney.
Thank you. Mayor, Council Members, if I may, question for the city engineer, which I don't know the answer to. If the council adopts a resolution for a citywide allocation of these funds or reallocation of these funds, and the project is focused only solely on one area, does that create an issue with the county?
No. Okay. It creates more flexibility for us is the way we've figured this out, basically. Okay. We wanted to give ourselves some flexibility, and citywide pedestrian-type enhancements, they're not going to care where we put that within the city.
Okay. So thank you for asking that question and that clarification. Yes.
In the interest of moving that forward, then, I would make the motion resolution number 11 of the City Council of the City of Grover Beach allocating new CDBG funds and reallocating leftover funds for the city's community development block grant.
Okay, I'll second that for sake of discussion. Any discussion on the motion? Okay. Roll call.
Yes.
Mayor Scholes?
Yes.
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 And then I think the final thing I'd like to say on this is to want to thank staff for putting together the staff report. Also, I think being the council's representative on SLOCOG, I think as we go forward, there may be an opportunity for additional funding through Safe Routes to School and other funding sources. So I would look forward to staff giving us, the council and myself, that information so that we can pursue other funding sources to complete both projects timely.
Okay.
Okay. So what I'd like to do, if my council colleagues are in agreement, I know that we have one individual here who has an interest in the letter to the county supervisors. And what I'd like to do is let's move that item number 8 up before item 5. That way we can have that discussion and we can allow the gentleman to make his comments. And then we can go back to item 5. Is that okay with everyone?
That's fine. That's good.
Okay. So then we're going to move to our regular business item, which is item number 8. And this is a letter to the county supervisor requesting support of supplemental water for the Pomo Mesa. Mr. Ray.
Thank you again, Honorable Mayor, Mayor Pro Tem and City Council. Tonight, staff on behalf of the Northern City Management Area Technical Group, staff is requesting council support and approval of a draft letter to the Board of Supervisors. The draft letter is a letter of support for supplemental water in the Napomo Mesa area. And for some background, approximately two-thirds of the city of Grover Beach's freshwater supply comes from the Santa Maria groundwater basin. And for nearly 30 years, along with our fellow cities of Rio Grande and Pismo Beach and the Oceano Community Services District, the city of Grover Beach has limited pumping of our aquifer so as not to exceed the basin's safe yield. So we've been very careful about the management of our own aquifer. Then in 2002, the city of Grover Beach, along with Rio Grande, Pismo, and the Oceano Community Services District, became a party to the Santa Maria Valley litigation and regarding regional water impacts. And in 2008, the city became a party to a settlement agreement to end that litigation. Also included in that settlement agreement were water purveyors in the Napomo Mesa. So the cities near us, us being a party of that, are called the Northern Cities Management Area, and the water purveyors in the Napomo Mesa area are called the Napomo Mesa Management Area. So NCMA and NMMA are the two groups. As part of the settlement agreement, the court stipulated that the Napomo Community Services District must purchase and deliver a minimum of 2,500 acre-feet of supplemental water each year to the Napomo Mesa area. In addition to that, in the NMMA's 2010 annual report, they indicated that there are a number of direct measurements that indicate that demand exceeds the ability of the supply to replace the water pumped from the aquifer underlying the Napomo Mesa. Your staff is also aware that there are continuing reports of falling groundwater levels in the Napomo Mesa area. The attached letter simply communicates to the Board of Supervisors the importance of the supplemental water supply project to the residents of San Luis Obispo County, and more specifically to the citizens of Grover Beach. And so that is essentially it, and that concludes my staff report, except to mention that, again, what we're requesting is that Council approve the draft letter and authorize the mayor to sign on behalf of the city.
Thank you, Mr. Ray. Any questions of staff?
Yes, where is the supplemental water coming from?
Well, there are a number of options, I believe, available. The most talked about option is what's called the Santa Maria Waterline Intertie Project. There was a proposal, and I believe there has been some action at the county to move forward on a project that would bring a pipeline in from Santa Maria to the Napomo Mesa area and supply them supplemental water. I'm not sure if it's going to supply the entire 2,500 or not, but anyway, that was the proposed project. I've heard that there are other possibilities out there. The letter does not support a particular project. It simply supports the concept of supplemental water for the Napomo Mesa area.
Okay, because their draw... is eventually going to affect our draw, is that it, from the groundwater?
There's some evidence to suggest that. The water in the Santa Maria Valley aquifer generally flows from east to west, sort of a north to south, east to west general direction, which means it flows from the upper reaches of the entire watershed up near Santa Maria and above Santa Maria. Water penetrates into the ground, water aquifer, passes through Santa Maria, passes under the Napomo Mesa, and ultimately passes to us, and then by us passes out to the ocean. And that flow of groundwater is part of what keeps the salt water from coming back the other way, underground. In the earlier reports from the NMMA, the 2009 and 10 or 2008 and 9 reports, they indicated that there was a fairly substantial amount of underflow from the Napomo Mesa area to our aquifer area. In the 2010 report from the NMMA, they indicated that there is no underflow. Now, how decisive is that information? Well, the two technical groups, the NMMA and NCMA technical groups, have been working together to develop a groundwater model. This is an effort that will take a number of years and quite a bit of money to complete, but we know, what we know is that we don't know enough, and we know that we need a groundwater model in order to be able to then begin studying the effects of various things occurring within the aquifer at large.
So in spite of the excess rain we've had the last year, they're still low. Their water level is still decreasing.
I think one of the staff members on the NMMA technical group probably stated it best, and that is that this is a yellow flag. Even though we had higher than average rainfall, or just higher than average rainfall last couple years, the well levels are continuing to be reported dropping. So that's not a good indicator.
All right. Thank you.
Councilmember Peter.
So if I could just repeat back to you what I think I heard in maybe more laywoman's terms. So you're saying basically that there's a strong chance that there's not enough water there. And so this letter is sending a message to the county to say, go find some water somewhere else because we may need it.
To remind you, there was a court settlement, mm-hmm. and the court stipulated that the one of the water purveyors in the Napomo Mesa, they stipulated that they bring 2,500 acre feet of water annually into that area. So we're saying two things. We're saying, one, we want to remind the county board of supervisors of the importance of that project, and two, we are saying that we believe that there's strong indicators that there's an overdraft and that could also affect us.
Thank you.
Okay, Mayor Pro Tem, any questions?
No.
Great. Thank you, Greg. This is a business item, but I'm going to open this up to the public, and if anyone would like to address that before the council, please come forward. State your name and city of residence for the record.
My name is John Songson. I live in Cypress Ridge, Rio Grande, and I'm here on behalf of the Napomo Mesa community, not the Mesa Community Alliance, which is a group of concerned citizens on this issue. There is so little information being published on this issue other than what's coming out of Napomo that it's of big concern to us. Depending on who you want to believe, we're not in overdraft. The supplemental water is coming out of the aquifer in Santa Maria, so that is not an outside source. And if you go look at data that's on various websites, the Napomo people have hired this water consulting firm to do an analysis, detailed analysis, by year starting in 1975 through their approved concepts. In 1976, the spring level was 82,000 acre feet, and they got them listed all the way down here. This spring, it was 87,000 acre feet. So to say we're in jeopardy of running out of water, we don't believe that's true. And my role here is to offer you information from technical people that know a lot more about it than I do. If you want to understand this and look at the pros and cons before you rush to judgment, they would be happy to come and give you a half-hour presentation with all the data and answer all your questions. One of the members of this committee is Larry Bersall, who I believe was
mayor of Grover Beach some years ago. So, you know, we've got technical people on the committee, and some of them live in the Pomo, some of them live on the Mesa, and one of them lives in Santa Maria. But I just want to make sure that you have both sides of this issue presented to you before you move forward, because our position is we are not in jeopardy at this moment. We need to get the county on board to look at a regional solution. This is not going to solve the bigger problem. It's moving water within our same aquifer. So that's our concern.
Can I ask a question?
Just one second. Mr. Songson, are you done with your comments? You want to stay there?
I want to ask him a question.
Yes, okay. You can. Councilman Warner.
What was the name of that the organization that did this testing going back in the 70s? This is an independent group?
Yes, this was hired by the Nopomo Community Service District.
Okay.
And it's the Water Resources Engineering out of Santa Barbara.
Oh.
It's a consulting civil engineering corporation. They provide a report, an annual report. This is the June 13, 2011 report that shows the levels that they calculate spring and fall.
And so they actually do testing to the level of the aquifer?
There's a number of monitoring wells, as I understand it, that provides that data.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, John.
Thank you.
I have one question, John.
Did you have a question? No, Mayor Pro Tem.
Yes, sir.
Do you know whether or not the court took this report into consideration when they rendered their judgment?
They did. Their judgment just says to find alternative sources.
No, my question was, did they take that?
I do not know the answer to that, sir.
Oh, okay. That was my question.
I'm just
before that report came out.
Okay. So let me ask Bob or Greg, are there any timing issues? Is there any urgency with doing this letter?
Greg, are you aware of any?
What I'm aware of is that it may be the same group, but a group of concerned citizens in the Nopomo Mesa area have requested to have an item placed on the Board of Supervisors agenda I believe the question is to either modify or to take over the proposed assessment, assessment district formation for the supplemental water. So, you know, the county has begun to move forward on those first steps, and that is begin with engineering for an assessment district, determine the cost of the project, and begin to figure out how the cost would be allocated to the Nopomo Mesa for the supplemental water. And so there's an item before the board coming up. I believe it was proposed initially this month, and it got put off. So I'm not sure the exact date it's scheduled now, but it's coming up fairly soon, is my understanding, if it gets scheduled.
Okay.
I have a question.
Okay, Mayor Pro Tem.
Then part of this is that the $2,500 that we're talking about is going to be a cost factor to the residents of the Mesa?
Yes, it's likely to be expensive.
Okay, so I'm wondering now if that maybe isn't more of their concern than anything else. They want to avoid the cost.
I couldn't speak to that. I don't know.
Okay, Councilmember Peterson.
I do see of course, I'm sure they'd want to avoid the cost, and I know that doing an intertie project from Santa Maria through to Nopomo, it will be very expensive. However, I do see that there is a contradiction in terms in the letter that was drafted, because it states basically that our groundwater supply comes from the Santa Maria groundwater basin, which is our basin. So this isn't supplemental supply. It is indeed, from what the letter's stating, just taking water from further south and pumping it north. So I don't see that it resolves a supplemental water problem.
Mr. Ray.
To say that water and water law and sources of water and all this is not complicated would be in the Napomo Mesa area, they received a set allocation of amount of water that they can take from the aquifer. And on top of that, they were required to bring in water from a supplemental source. Now, supplemental source doesn't necessarily have to be different water. It has to be water, though. In this case, it needs to be water that does not affect the problem in the same way. In this case, the Santa Maria groundwater basin is very large. Not all of the water in the Santa Maria groundwater basin flows directly below Napomo. Some of it flows considerably further south. And Santa Maria has more water in the basin than they project that they will need. So they have more paper water and real water than they need, and they're willing to transfer some of that to the Napomo Mesa area.
Thank you.
Good job on a very complex subject.
May I ask counsel, how long was this in litigation? Do you recall?
Years.
Before the settlement was reached?
I joined the city's staff in 2002. And one of the first things that I dealt with was reassignment of special counsel on this item. So the litigation has been ongoing since at least 2002, if not 2001. Settlement was reached, going to say, a year and a half ago. The case is currently on appeal before the Court of Appeals, and briefs are being filed as we speak. So the litigation is not, technically speaking, over. If a water law case takes 10 to 12 years to resolve, it was fast-tracked. These things move very, very slowly for reasons outlined by the city engineer, as well as fairly complicated technical and legal aspects of the case. So 10, 15, 20-year litigation over water rights is not uncommon.
Yeah. Good thing the water doesn't flow that slow.
As the water attorney told us, the only law applicable to water law is water flows towards money. And it's
nice. So why don't I, you know, here's my thoughts on this, everyone. I know we've had lots of comments. Clearly, the board's going to make whatever this additional information, and that might also give Mr. Songson's group an opportunity to present some of that information. So that's a suggestion. I don't know what everyone thinks about that.
I'm okay with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm okay.
Someone want to make a motion, or is that just direction to the attorney?
That's sufficient direction.
Okay, so we will put the letter on hold until we receive additional information from city staff and others offering technical, some evidence to support claims.
Okay.
Okay, then let's move back up to item number 5, and this is the fiscal year 12 citizens option for public safety COPS grant and authorization to reallocate the fiscal year 11 COPS grant funds. Police Chief Copsey, you're on.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. Each year we bring this item before you as long as we continue to get these grant funds. In 1997, the state enacted the Citizens Option for Public Safety grant, which is the known as the COPS grant. This program allocates funds for local law enforcement frontline delivery of services. The funds must be used to augment but not replace existing funds for law enforcement services for different uses. The law requires that these funds be appropriated pursuant to written requests from the Chief of Police, hold a public hearing, and consider the requests. And that's what we're here tonight to do. The City Council approves the recommendations prior to submission to a supplement law enforcement oversight committee, which then submits their review and approval to the state. Last year, the $100,000 was budgeted to fund one dispatcher position, overtime to enhance operations, and for frontline services for equipment. These funds were encumbered in FY11 and are currently being spent during this FY12 budget. So in essence, you have 2 years to spend the grant funds overall. We've been, you know, you encumber it 1 year, we spend it the second year, or you can spend it in the first year depending on the needs of the agency. This year, we again expect to receive $100,000 from the COPS grant. Staff has evaluated the police department's needs and is recommending that these funds be spent for increased technology and records management system, RMS upgrades, department equips, a remaining of $55,000 from that grant that I'll discuss later about reappropriating, reallocating some funds there. So that's where the $155,000 total comes from, so it's not all from just this one-year grant. For many years, our agency has utilized these grant funds to fund a full-time dispatch position to augment the existing dispatch staffing levels. Staff has evaluated the use of those funds for this purpose and feels that the COPS funds should be utilized for other frontline service needs other than salary position. These needs have been delayed, these technology needs and equipment needs, for now, but we feel that they need to be addressed. And staff in no way wants to minimize the need for the dispatcher position, and we believe it's still needed. It is needed, and we've looked at that position. We feel that we need that position still in the department. However, we feel that just as strongly that we need to use these funds for other sources. You're just kind of balancing funding needs. This is one area where we can find funds to address a number of needs in the department. The current format for these grant funds are reviewed each year, and as you know, this year was very difficult in the state budget, and we again almost lost these funds. Staff believes that we're very concerned about the sustainability of these funds, and we feel that these grant funds should be used for one-time equipment purchases and not for ongoing salary needs that the department has. We've kind of been doing that for some time, and we feel that those dispatch, in this case the dispatch salary needs, need to be moved to general fund expenditures. Staff believes the dispatch should be funded with general funds in order to keep that an ongoing position. Staff does not feel, as I mentioned, that funding staff positions with grant funds should be continued over a long period of time, but maybe as a brief sort. But over, I think it's been 7+ years, almost 8 years since we've been funding this position. Staff is recommending that the remaining costs for the dispatch position for this current year, FY12, be moved over to the general fund expenditures budgeted for in the future. Next year as a secure funding source, and using the COP funds, which may be a temporary funding source, for one-time purchases as we've outlined here. Should the council approve or approve direction or give direction for funding that dispatch position with general funds, staff would need to return later with a resolution for appropriating those funds to help fund part of this project. Staff is recommending authorizing a change in the expenditure plan that has already been approved for the FY11 COPS grant to fund the records management system upgrades of $45,000. In order to do that, the current full-time dispatch position funded by the grant will either need to be eliminated or moved to a part-time position. And we can fund that part-time as outlined in the exhibit. There's been earmarked some dollars, if that's a direction we go, to fund part-time dispatch to help fill some of the gaps if it's not funded with general funds. These funds, in part, will be formed from the salary savings, that $45,000 and the extra $55,000. You know, we get $100,000 this year. The extra $55,000 will be gained from the reallocation of the dispatch position, estimated about $29,000. And then already approved for frontline services from that grant, the remaining $26,000, which has already been approved, will be used to additional for the records management system and additional frontline services. It has always been understood by staff and the person filling that position, that the dispatch position, that it could be eliminated or would be eliminated should the city lose the grant funding or should the council choose to use those funds for other sources. Should the council choose not to fund the dispatch position with general funds, or should general funds not be available, staff believes that with five dispatchers, we currently are running with six and a supervisor, with five dispatchers and a supervisor, staff believes that we still be able to provide effective dispatch services to our community by maximizing the remaining personnel and utilizing more of the supervisor's time for scheduling to meet the demands of the department and the community. There would be minimal impact, and I would bet that the citizens of our community would not notice a difference. Also, it is also anticipated with some of the new technologies that it may, or we expect the dispatch workload to be less due to better communication with field personnel via mobile computing and better communication via with the technology. I still want to make sure that that dispatch position is needed, but we, you know, balancing the two, we feel we can minimize that impact to the community should we not be able to fund it with general funds. Staff has identified a number of issues, and without going through every one of them, basically the number one item is technology and records management improvements. Staff has identified some unfunded technology. Then should we not fund the dispatcher position with general funds, staff has estimated $10,000 of part-time funding should go to continue to try and augment some of the staffing needs and maybe fill the gaps should we be able to obtain a part-time dispatcher. Should the council fund ask to fund that with general funds, that $10,000 can be just moved into frontline services as well for additional unmet equipment needs. Should costs for procurement of equipment fall below the expected amounts? Because at this point, we've kind of just estimated some of the costs. There may be some that come in cheaper. The extra portion of this grant we use to supplement personnel overtime and also for frontline services to be filled in, you know, as different things come up for the need during this equipment project. There is a fiscal impact. Should council choose to reallocate the funds for grant-funded dispatch position, move that to the general fund, expected impact to the general fund in this year, FY12, is expected to be about $29,000. And for next year to continue that dispatch position, it will be approximately $85,000 a year for that dispatch position. That includes the salary and benefits and everything that comes with it. Should both resolutions be adopted and the no general funds be authorized, there will be no impact on the existing budgets, previously approved budget, or next for this grant, since these are pass-through grant funds. So to sum it up, we need to use a combination of both the allocated, reallocate some of the FY11 grant funds and the $100,000 of this year's expected funds to complete the listed projects. At this time, staff is recommending the City Council adopt the resolution authorizing the reallocation of the FY11 COPS funds, and number two, adopt the resolution approving the allocation of FY12 COPS funds, or provide further direction to staff. And I'll be happy to answer any questions.
Chief, thank you for that very thorough staff report. That really helps a lot. So let me see if Councilmember Monar, do you have any questions?
I'm adding.
Okay.
You
would. Councilman Peterson, no questions? Mayor Pro Tem Nichols? Are you ready?
Yes. Oh. I didn't finish adding.
Well, I'll let him ask, and then I'll come back to you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
You state, Chief, that you believe and still perform, as you have been, the needs of the community, then all you need to do is say, yes, I want to use this money to upgrade the equipment. We'll continue with 5 dispatchers. We don't need a 6th dispatcher at this time. That makes it pretty simple. Am I oversimplifying
nope,
this? No,
that's correct, Mayor Pro Tem. There's two issues, though. One is we have a position that's filled. It is nice and beneficial. It reduces overtime. There's a lot of benefits to having that 6th dispatcher position. It would be nice to keep that. However, we believe staff has evaluated our scheduling, we can redo some things, and we can function without it. If there's no general funds, which we understand that there's not, that's why I want to make sure it's very clear that should that not be should the council make that decision not to fund that with general funds, we are more than prepared to provide adequate and effective dispatching to our community.
Okay, well, I appreciate that, and with the furlough program we got going, I cannot at the moment conceive that we have the money in the general fund
to provide that dispatcher.
And I agree with that, and that's okay. Why I want to make sure it was clear that it's still our commitment to provide adequate dispatch.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay. Councilmember Mona.
What's the role of the supervisor?
There's many roles that she takes on. I like that little saying at the end of her job class, other duties as assigned. She does most of our technology, computer stuff. She does all of the evaluations, supervision, scheduling for dispatch. She also fills in currently a couple of shifts as a fill-in. She fills in on overtime when people are sick to reduce our overtime. And we plan to... with the lieutenant's help, we plan to reducing some of her supervisory duties and shift some of her workload into actually filling some of the dispatch roles, actually running a station and dispatching a station. So she's kind of a jack of all trades with what she does.
Have you done a comparison? You talked about if we did not have the sixth dispatcher, then there might be possible overtime. Did you do a comparison to see how much it would cost more in terms of overtime?
Absolutely. We did. We actually looked at scheduling, and that's one of the commitments. When we worked with it, we sat down as staff, and we looked at scheduling options, and we did not think that...
By letting the sixth dispatcher eventually go, that would release the funds for all of these. And do we really... I understand the need for the record management system upgrade since all of the other... the different communities are doing it, the different counties. What's the purpose of this Homeland Security Buffer Zone plan?
There's actually many purposes to that. That's a grant that we brought before council, I think it was back in March, for approval for the assurances, and it's actually going to count to the Board of Supervisors tomorrow morning. But it's actually a $190,000 grant that we received from the Department of Homeland Security for specialized equipment and tools for the way it works is there's identified in our city, without divulging where that is, there's identified in our city a specific location that needs to be protected, and we have been allocated funds to protect that. It's a funding source that we can utilize to obtain equipment and material, but it doesn't cover everything.
So that's what the 41.5 is
right,
for?
Right, that's correct.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Okay. They've asked all the questions I had. You've answered questions that I had. This is a public hearing item. Is there anyone from the public that would like to address the council on this item? You seeing them? Bring it back to the council. Chief, I actually do have a question.
I'm back.
Yes, sir.
So how would a part-time dispatcher be be placed in the rotation? Because you had talked about if there's no money in the general fund that you would recommend $10,000 of the COPS grant for at least fiscal year 12 be utilized for a part-time dispatcher.
If we're allowed to use those monies, then a part-time dispatcher, if we can find a qualified dispatcher, they would fill some of the gaps. And those gaps would be vacations, scheduling, differences, furlough times, as
okay.
We have. We're committed to filling those with existing staff, minimizing overtime. We actually have a set internal policy about not using overtime for furloughs, of course, because that mm-hmm. changes that. But with this project, the supervisor will be tasked with many of additional duties with technology. In some of that transition time, it would be we, as we're facilitating dispatch, we have probably by about 50% of the time, depending on staffing levels, we can provide two dispatchers. Now, a lot of times those dispatchers aren't necessarily as busy as they could be. When somebody calls in from the community, they don't know whether there's one, two, or four dispatchers, whether a supervisor, who's answering. All they care about is when somebody calls that they get that phone picked up right away and they get their problem solved, and we guarantee that we will continue to do that.
Great.
So I don't think the community will know the difference.
Okay, other than those watching TV tonight.
So. They won't.
And this is effective, wasn't it?
Yeah. Great. They will get their calls answered.
Great.
Yes.
Thank you, Chief.
have another question.
Okay, Councilmember Martin.
Okay. So our grant is $100,000, is that of the COPS is $100,000, correct?
Correct.
And we're, of course, with my quick adding, this comes to more than $100,000. So where does the difference come from?
The projects are total about $155,000. $100,000 of that comes from what the public hearing is for is today, for this new $100,000 that we're going to get this year. The remaining $55,000 will come from reallocation of the previous grant that we're currently using to pay for the dispatcher and for frontline services. A dispatcher position this year, you know, would be about $76,000 to $80,000. If we cut it off in February, that leaves $29,000 from that position, plus the already allocated $30,000 or $26,000 that we've already allocated in that grant. So this current grant makes up that remaining difference. Hopefully that makes sense.
All right, thank you.
That clears it up. Absolutely.
So we're using 2 years' grants to meet the $155,000. We're already spending, you know, 45 of it for the dispatcher position.
Okay.
Up till February.
Great.
Okay.
Okay. Some discussion. Councilmember Peterson, you've been awfully quiet. Do you have anything?
Well, I know that the police department has taken a really careful look at this, and I think that they've made good management decisions, and I trust them to do that, and it appears that they've done it yet again, and so I'm very comfortable with going with their request.
And let me just
for the discussion, I'll make the motion.
So let me clarify, because their request looks to be that we take this 155 total, which is consisting of 100,000 this year and unused, the 55,000 that's unused, or at least that's what's here as part of attachment A. Is that your understanding, Councilmember Peterson? Okay. And that basically would not come from any of that from the general fund. That would be funded strictly through the COMS grants. Okay.
That's what I was going to ask. Make sure.
Okay. So someone have any other discussion? Is someone prepared to make a motion?
Your Honor, before we move forward,
yes.
If I may inquire of the Chief, the resolution that's proposed shows $45,000 in reallocation. Is that number accurate, or should it be 55?
Good catch. Thank you, City Attorney.
Actually, that number is accurate,
okay,
because they've already allocated so much for the dispatch position, so much for already equipment frontline services. So we're just keeping that allocation. They're just reallocating some of the and then specifying. So actually, it's really could be technically 29,000, but we're just keeping the project in there. So
very good.
Thank you. It meets the need.
Thank you, City Attorney.
And then some of these costs were kind of guesstimates, right?
Yes.
Okay, so if there's any excess money from purchase of these items, we would put that towards the dispatch? Is that?
Any excess, if it's not funded with the identified items, there's always unfunded items in the police department, and it either could be any of the frontline services that we have. And it's kind of we use what we've done in the past is what's identified in here with overtime for special enforcement details. We use overtime monies for that, and it pays back into the general fund over time. Or if there's any unfunded frontline services, which could be, you know, pretty much any of the equipment needs.
Okay.
All right.
Mayor Pro Tem.
Yeah, I will move that we adopt the resolution authorizing the Grover Beach Police Department's recommendation for changing the spending plan for the citizens' option for public grants fiscal year 11, and as set forth in the resolution.
I'll second that.
Okay, so is that for one of the resolutions, correct?
That's correct. You want them separately.
So there's a motion and there is a second. Any discussion on the motion? If there is none, roll call.
Yes.
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 Then I will also move that we adopt the resolution accepting the Grover Beach Police Department's recommendation.
Discussion regarding either completed elimination of a position or adding a position, that be done in the context of budget and it be done in the context of all staffing. I think that you know, would feel better than trying to make a decision here like we're on an island. So okay. It's there is a motion on the floor. If there's no additional comments, roll call.
Yes.
Councilmember
Peterson.
Yes.
Councilmember Bright is absent.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you, Chief. Okay, let's move on to the consent agenda. This is, we have two items on here taken as a group. One is the Treasury Report for the period of September 14th through the 27th, 2011. And the second is our Business Tax Certificate Report for the second quarter of 2011. Do any members of the Council want to pull any item from consent?
No.
Okay, is someone prepared to make a motion?
I'll move for staff's recommendation to approve both items.
Okay. There is a motion to approve items or the consent agenda, which is items 6 and 7. Is there a second?
I second that.
Okay. There's a motion and a second. If there's no additional discussion, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. We addressed item number 8. Let's move to item number 9. This is disposition of the Carolyn House. City Manager Peralta.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the Council. The Carolyn House is located adjacent to the Mentone Basin, as you'll recall, in the park setting. The Carolyn House was built in the 1930s by Mr. Thomas Carolyn and was located originally along Atlantic City Avenue in the vicinity of 14th Street. In the 80s, that building was purchased by a developer who then moved it to the current site and dedicated it to city's use. This was done in order to make way for the new development. Since that time, the building has served a couple of different functions for a number of years. It was the Parks and Recreation Department office. But for the last several years, it has been basically used for file storage. The building has unfortunately been in deteriorating condition for a number of years, and the problem was it was made worse with it last year's storm conditions. The building roof leaked in a number. The total cost to repair that building is probably somewhere in excess of $50,000. At this point, staff does not have that kind of money in the budget or the general fund to allocate for the restoration of the building. Cost to estimate to demolish the building would be between $5,000 and $7,000. We did take the item to the Parks and Rec Commission because it's sited in the Parks and Recreation Commission, a recreation area, and they reviewed the future of the building. It was the commission's decision to at least recommend that the council offer the building to any individual or groups that maybe wish to preserve the building either on site or remove the building to preserve it. Obviously, any costs associated with the building's movement or preservation would have to be the responsibility of the interested party. I should note that there is no historic real tie to this building. It was built originally in 1930s, but technically it's been moved from its original foundation some time ago, so technically it doesn't actually qualify as a historical building. Right now, the city had identified about well before the storm issue, we had identified $7,000 to do something with this building and anticipating it was going to need attention. But we do have an insurance claim that will settle out at about $5,000, giving us roughly $12,000 that we actually have available. It should be noted that this wouldn't be sufficient to actually do what's needed to the building to, in essence, preserve it. Essentially, the council has a number of alternatives available to it. It could go ahead and direct that the house be demolished. It could direct that city first solicit individual party to preserve the building at no cost to the city, but absent indication of this interest, direct that the building be demolished. The council could.
So currently the building has been used to store files. Mm-hmm. And where are those files being taken to now?
We removed them to a temporary storage location. What we were able to do is actually secure a below market rate in one of the Ford buildings that were very close for a couple of months so that we could sort through those files, determine which ones had to be retained and which ones we could actually begin to eliminate.
So if the house was demolished, then what eventually will we do with the files?
Well, hopefully what will happen is that once we get through the process that we're going through now in terms of eliminating, we feel a good number of those files will end up being eliminated, and then those that are remaining will have to find storage space for.
Do you have a budget amount for that
yet? In terms of the storage space?
Yes.
Well, there is some possibility. We've been looking at alternatives. We may, depending amount of files that we actually have to maintain, there may be some space that we may be able to make available at the corporation yard to maintain what is left. We're also taking a look at other storage alternatives, and if it's going to cost us significantly, we would bring that back to you.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
No question. No. I have a comment.
Okay.
My comment is
this is a business item. I'd like to open this up, so comment. You can start.
My comment is let's get the insurance money and tear the thing down and get rid of it and use that space for Parks Recreation Department, whatever Ms. Petker can come up with.
Okay. Any other comments?
Is that a motion?
I can certainly turn it into one.
Well, let me ask a question first. So I had asked the city manager, so let me just ask this question publicly. As far as the disposition of this and making this available to someone in the public who might be interested, what is the process? What is the time frame that something like that might?
City attorney will answer that question.
Thank you. Honorable Mayor, council members, unlike the disposition of real property, for which there is a specific process set up, unless SERP make this building available for someone, I imagine we could probably formulate some type of advertising for a period of time and see if there's anybody who steps up. I would envision having to draft contracts and some types of agreements in order to avoid a situation where we turn this building over to somebody and it is either on-site or off-site maintained as a eyesore because somebody there didn't have the impetus or the finances to move forward with it with sufficient expediency. But those things can be contractually worked out. But it would be a process that I would imagine, assuming someone steps up and is interested, I don't foresee it taking longer than a couple of months.
Okay. All right. So, Mayor Pro Tem.
For a bit of levity, we could offer a two-for-one sale. There's a place up on Atlantic City that we could offer that they, okay, somebody was interested.
You can bring it up later.
Okay.
Make a motion.
yes. I move that we direct staff to go ahead and finalize the insurance claim and then have the building removed.
I second that.
Was okay. That the building demolished?
Yes.
Demolished and removed.
So there's a second. There's a motion, a little discussion. Phyllis, do you have any discussion on the motion? I'll just say that I'm going to support the motion in light of the city attorney's response. I think it's well documented that it does not have any historical value, especially in light of it being removed from its original site. So I think the cleanest and simplest way is to proceed in this fashion. So with that, I don't believe we have a resolution on this, so I can just on a voice vote. So all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? None. Motion carries. Okay, let's see. We don't have any pool consent items this evening. Council committee reports. Councilmember Monar, you have any reports? Although I guess Bill Worrell gave yours tonight.
Bill gave mine.
Anything else?
No.
Yeah, we're coming down to it. Councilmember Peterson.
Yes, the VCB, they're had the Savor the Central Coast celebration this weekend. I think it went very well. We had a lot of help from the city on the city stand, and that was much appreciated. We did receive a large contribution from a member from a local business to get businesses and the county to pull together for the economic development of the county and receive some more reports. And I'll report a little more on that at some other time. And that's all.
Okay, very good. Now. Mayor Pro Tem, do you have anything?
Two comments on the sanitation district. Last Wednesday, we held an open house at the sanitation plant. We had approximately 20 visitors that came out. They were divided up into two groups and given a tour of the facility. Both council members Molnar and Peterson were present there, which we all appreciate. And it was very successful. It went very well. I think had the weather been a little bit brighter, we might have had more people out there. But that's the way it goes. And the only other thing I have is on the 10-year plan to end the homeless program. We did have a so-called retreat today under the direction of a facilitator, trying to determine what we can get accomplished within the next year. This program has been in effect for 2 years now, and quite frankly, we have very little to show for the two-year effort. There's been an awful lot of discussion, an awful lot of planning, but not much has come of it. So the retreat today was to see if we can't pull this thing together and actually start accomplishing something, and I think great strides were made. I will have a further report on it within the next couple of weeks. That's it.
Very good. So let me just quickly. The San Luis Obispo Council of Governments and the Regional Transit Authority Board meets on Wednesday, October 5th. I had alluded to a couple of things earlier. I just wanted to make you aware of. At the meeting on Wednesday, one of the items or two of the items that I'll highlight is there is going to be a report on efforts to extend or reauthorize the federal surface transportation legislation, or what is known as SAFE TLU. And the reason this is important to us is when it comes to applying for funds and qualifying, we very rarely qualify when it comes to major transportation improvements because we don't have a lot of frontage or on major highways and corridors. Where we've been able to be very successful and getting funds to do projects is through the Transportation Enhancement Program, which is federal. So that is something that's being debated, the comprehensive funding of certain projects, and gives a status report. For example, they talk about projects funded out of this source, the Transportation Enhancement, in 2010 was $800,000 to the city of Grover Beach for the Grand Avenue streetscape improvements, and that's called Phase 2. That is the funds we've talked about earlier. Phase 1 was what was done on the west end of Grand. Phase 2 is 4th to 9th Street. And then they also list as a candidate project the city of Grover Beach Grand Avenue Phase 3. And I'm sure they're thinking that Phase 3 is between 4th and 9th, but I think we have an opportunity to kind of redefine that. But I do know that we are hopefully moving forward with designing a majority of the Grand Avenue corridor, because there is an opportunity for funding. And then I also believe there is a call for projects that will be coming up within a month or so. And so I will make staff aware of those deadlines, and then I will report back to you all the next council meeting, depending on the decisions made on Wednesday. Okay? Bob, did you have anything on the lodge or anything you want to report?
Just that we're expecting to be meeting on this Thursday at 10 o'clock by phone, and the purpose of that is to review the concepts of the of the conference center, as it was referenced in the last meeting. And once the JA has weighed in on those concepts, then we will go back to coming up with a time frame to bring it back to the council.
Okay, very good. And then I'll just close by giving you all an update regarding the Five Cities Fire Joint Powers Authority. There was a meeting, not this last Friday, but two Fridays ago, in which the board has chosen to, they've hired a firm to come on and do polling to determine if there is support with creating a fire protection district, or taking this from a joint powers authority to an actual entity that would have its own ability to generate revenues. So we had gotten an initial feedback from some of the initial polling. It seems very favorable from their calls to folks in the service territory, that includes Grover Beach, Arroyo, and Oceano. They're going to be coming back to the board, I think, at next month's meeting.
He had been called and asked the questions on the survey, and he was very unhappy with it. The way the questions were worded, it was his opinion that they worded it such that you could hardly say no. Do you want to continue to have full service from your local fire department? Well, who's going to say no? Do you want to continue to have the quick response time that you are now getting? Who's going to say no? I'm not sure that those were the exact questions, but they were along that line. I mention this only to say that there has been some concern about how the questions were worded during the survey, and I thought maybe it would be to your benefit to have that information.
Well, that's good, because I think the next question in that series might be, are you willing to pay for it? And if they can't, they will say no. But thank you for that, and I will share that with the subcommittee. And if anyone else has received any comments or complaints to that, I would appreciate hearing about those.
Yeah, it might be good to, I don't know if the okay. questions are available that they yeah. used.
And
might be good for you to look at it.
City Attorney.
Thank you. Honorable Mayor, Council members, I think once the final report is provided to the board, both the survey and the account of the responses is a public document.
It will be a public
document. So the questions will be there, and the readers hopefully didn't vary from what was provided to them in print, but all the questions that were asked will be there verbatim.
Good. Thank you.
Very good. So let's see. We don't have any council member items this evening. Council communications. This is item number 10. And this is a report from the annual League of California Cities Conference held September 21st to the 23rd. And I believe Councilmember Peterson had some information she wanted to share on this.
Yes, I was very, very glad that I chose to attend this one. It had been about 15 months since I'd last attended anything like it. And I have to say, of the ones I've attended, this was the best. There was a lot of very helpful information about how to make best use of the resources we have in difficult times. And I felt like it was time and money well spent. So I passed on, I like to go for refreshers on how council meetings are run, because it's we work more efficiently together if we understand how Robert's Rules of Orders. I did have one other announcement not related to that, but I understand that on Saturday, coming Saturday, there is going to be a railroad festival, and Amtrak has been very supportive in that, and there will be a little celebration down at the railroad station, at the train station here in Grover Beach, and Balloony the Clown's going to be there, and there'll be some drawings for train tickets and the train ride and all kinds of fun things, so some food from me and Z's, and so thanks to the local businesses that supported that, and great to see people making use of our great little train station.
And what time is
that? That will be this coming Saturday. Saturday the 8th, and it's a railroad festival, and it starts at 11 a.m.
Thank you.
Okay. Okay, thanks for sharing. I won't be available to, so.
You don't want to go see Blooney?
Blooney's a personal friend of mine. Are you kidding? No, I actually have a prior commitment, so. But I'm sure we'll have great representation. So, thanks. City Attorney, do you have anything?
No, thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. A couple of items.
Okay. I'm sorry. No, that's okay. So, Mayor Pro Tem, you have Council Communication.
I do have something on Council Communications. We had this past weekend the Filipino Narvacon annual celebration. This is the 20th year of the sister city relationship, which we attended the dinner, and city manager was there, and they wanted me to share with the rest of the council.
Oh, the pink bag?
I do have one for Karen also, and I do have one for the city manager, which I will give to you afterward. These are shirts that they wanted to share with us. We also shared with them shirts that were made with Grover Beach on them.
Okay, very good.
That's it.
Okay. So I see I did get ahead of myself, so. City Manager, you wanted to on item 11 discuss the schedule for a special workshop.
Yes, Mr. Mayor, members of the line, and actually the restoration of the water tank. So we've actually done a lot. It's now time to reconfigure, especially get a jump on the 2-year budget that we're going to be looking at shortly. So I'm suggesting staff has been working at a draft CIP for the council to review. I'm suggesting that we do that in a workshop session. And I was going to suggest, I didn't put it in this report, but that we might want to take a look at the meeting Monday, October 24th, by chance. There may be another date that is more convenient, but that's an off Monday. If you're interested in doing that. Other than that, we'll hopefully select a date that works for everybody.
I'm fine.
It's good for me.
Works for me. I think it's okay with the Mayor Pro Tem.
Okay.
Silence is concurrence. All right. Okay. October 24.
Great.
6:30?
Yes.
Usual time, huh?
Pizza?
No.
Teasing.
Salad. Okay.
Salad.
Okay. City Attorney.
Thank you, Honorable Mayor, Council Members. A couple of quick items. First one, if any of you are planning to attend the railroad celebration on Saturday, I'll just remind you that the current law, one of the very few things that you can immediately be unseated for is accepting free rides from a railroad. that law is still on the books.
Well, we laugh, so but thank you very much for making us aware of that. Yeah. Absolutely.
But we can win a trip, right?
I would recommend that
if you buy a raffle
unless it is free to everyone, and I would stay away from accepting any rides from the railroad.
So
or if there is one, just buy the ticket.
That's what I said. And if they were going to give away some raffle tickets, I mean ride. But
hold on. So I think actually, thank you for bringing that up.
Yeah.
The safest and cleanest way is just purchase your own ticket. However, if you are given a ticket, there will be gifting reporting that you would have
to. Requirements under government code 65-400, I believe. And that, after a long discussion, was basically pushed out till the next session. And there was no recommended action taken. There was insufficient information and some confusion with regard to the detail. The second one, the tort reform, where loser pays. a resolution that would recommend support from all cities for such a tort reform was quickly passed on to the resolution adopting committee. Thank you.
Great. Thank you for bringing that up. I should have given you that report. So I appreciate that, City Attorney. Okay. So we have come to our closed session. We do have one item tonight. City Attorney, what's that item that we're considering under closed session this evening?
Thank you. Honorable Mayor, Council members, the Council intends to meet in closed session on a single item, and that is instructions to a negotiating party with regard to a piece of property. That piece of property is identified as a Hillcrest Cell Tower, APN 060-581-041, with Crown Castle Inc. being the other negotiating party.
Very good. And with that, we are going to recess in the closed session.
I have one other comment. Would one of your ladies like this pink bag?
I would. All right, so I can go shopping.
I don't want it.
Can you say that? This was what we bought.
Don't you want it?